Football Weekly.
Football Weekly. In the Premier League, Liverpool survive Hell's Kitchen. Man United use dodgy website to send visitors away unhappy. Next up, it's the Champions League semi-finals. Man United face Arsenal. Chelsea take on Barcelona. We'll find Real now just 4 points behind and have a trip to Madrid coming up this weekend. Interesting. Elsewhere, Bundesliga as the German title race goes wide open once more. Klinsy gets binzied at Bayern, while in Italy, Milan, they say, could win the title. Pigs might fly. But with pigs flu, the big story worldwide right now, can we rule the Rossoneri out? All that plus the crisis at Southampton, the return of West Brom and the PFA Award, the biggest gigs controversy since Barry's last stand-up tour, in today's Football Weekly. Plenty to talk about by the sound of it. And boy, have we got some vocal talents to do just that with Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi, Paul. Good to see you back.
Yeah, you too.
Here, Podside. Yeah. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Thanks for stopping by, Barry. Raphael Honigstein of the Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Hi, James.
Hi. Listen, the Guardian's podcast, and this is thanks to you guys as much as anybody, have been nominated for a prestigious Webby Award. How could an award known as a Webby be anything but prestigious? Which honours excellence on the internet. You can show your support by going to webbyawards.com and click on the People's Voice category and find us in the podcast bit.
Very popular at Old Trafford, these Webby Awards.
Are they? All right. Early lead to Raphael Honigstein. Excellent. Now, you mentioned the controversy at Old Trafford. Of course, what an extraordinary afternoon it was on Saturday. Liverpool had gone top with a slightly controversial win at Hull. A little bit of discussion over some of Martin Atkinson's decisions there, but a 3-1 victory, and fair enough, which put them top of the table. Man United come into this game against Spurs, which we talked about the possibility of Spurs maybe causing a bit of an upset in, and then go 2-0 down. And then all hell breaks loose.
Yes, well, Howard Webb awarded a penalty, pointed at a spot which he shouldn't have given. Manchester United scored it and appear to have got 4 goals from one penalty, the way Tottenham fans, players and their manager have been complaining about it. I see in the paper today that Jermaine Jenas described the penalty that was awarded as a prime example of a referee crumbling under pressure at Old Trafford.
Right, he was the one that crumbled under pressure.
I'd be more inclined to say that the whole second half was a sign of a Southern team of namby-pambies notorious for their lack of backbone crumbling under pressure at Old Trafford. But what do I know?
5 goals in 22 minutes. How did it happen? And would it have happened anyway without the penalty, Raphael?
Well, not necessarily purely hypothetical, but
well, yes.
Certainly Spurs did completely roll over and collapse and just died on the pitch. Gomez lost the plot, as you said. His positioning was awful. He was running through the box, not knowing where he's coming or going. And there was no marking. And, you know, a United team who were quite pedestrian on the day, by the end looked like fantastic world beaters, but they weren't really. They were just... Every single attack after that penalty was a goal.
Harry Redknapp, as is customary, he always looks for somewhere to deflect the blame when one of his own team puts in a terrible performance, and he did the same here.
Well, who are you fingering here for the...
Well, just Spurs were feeble. Right. It's almost as if they were just looking for an excuse to roll over, and that penalty, admittedly, a bad decision went against them, but let's not forget, they were still 2-1 up when the penalty went in, but they capitulated, you know, like a house of cards. They were absolutely dismal. And thoroughly deserve to lose.
Well, there you go. Now, so what does this all mean for Arsenal? Is this the moment that the title is decided? And does it leave Man United bolstered, with their morale boosted, for Wednesday's visit by Arsenal?
Well, first of all, these two things are not necessarily connected. Secondly, I think United have tried very hard not to win the league, but they're still just doing enough to win it. Liverpool... at one stage seemed to be in the driving seat, couldn't quite get the result. The 4-4 didn't do them any favours. And I don't think anyone really, even in Rafa's private office, believes that United are still going to throw away this title.
If they haven't done it by now, when will they do it?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, they're on top because they've made fewer mistakes than everyone else, not because they've been the most flamboyant attacking team, because they clearly haven't. Although, in terms of what Arsenal can get from Saturday's performance... Wenger has said that he's going to go to Old Trafford to attack, and Spurs showed, as various teams have shown recently, that if you do attack United, they do remain vulnerable. So hopefully he will do that, rather than at Anfield, for example, when they played uniquely on the counter, to good effect, admittedly. But if they take the game to United, they could well get an away goal or two.
Right. Well, interesting. Well, they have one or two issues of their own at the back, of course.
That's another reason not to sit back, of course.
Yeah, that is true. Almunia is back, which is a massive boost after the form of Fabianski. No Arshavin, of course, which Arsenal fans feel could be decisive, poor chaps.
Yeah, I'd say it will be very decisive. Fabregas and Arshavin were linking up marvellously yesterday, and they've obviously formed a great partnership already, just getting the ball from midfield to the edge of the box. But my concern about Arsenal would be that yesterday, their ongoing, I don't know if it's been as bad this season as it was in previous times, but their insistence on trying to walk the ball into the net could yet be their undoing again.
Mm. A company at home like an ageing granny.
Well, I think against Middlesbrough, that is almost the only challenge left to them in some sense, to score the prettiest goal possible. It's going to be a different game. I think Fabregas looked fantastic, but then from what I saw, there was never any Middlesbrough player anywhere near him. So of course he had a lot of time to pick up the passes and look great and go forward, and no one was picking up from midfield. Before that, I think he's been pretty poor this season since coming back by his standards.
Well, he was out for a fair while. But what do you think? So they're going to play with him and then... Sorry,
Paul. Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see who they choose to play on the left instead of Arshavin. Because Arshavin, it's amazing how influential he has become in the short time he's been there. Even in matches where he's quite peripheral to the action, he inevitably has two or three excellent touches to create or score a goal. Nasri would probably be the most obvious candidate to play out there on the left. But at Middlesbrough, he was playing in this new deep-lying midfield role, which is where Wenger apparently says he foresees him playing in ultimately settling in. At Old Trafford, will he bring back in Alex Song, who's been very good recently? Yes, you would imagine. But who will play alongside Song? Will it be Song and Nasri? Or will he put Nasri out on the left where Arshavin normally is and play Song and Danielson, who I think has looked quite jaded recently after having a good season until the last few weeks?
How highly do you rate Arsenal's chances at Old Trafford?
I think they can win the tie.
Yeah. Barry?
If I was betting on it, I would bet on Manchester United to win over two legs. But yeah, I'd see Arsenal getting getting a draw at least.
Oh, I think United must be firm favourites.
Really?
Because, yeah,
shaky,
I think,
as they've looked.
They did, but they conceded two at home against Porto and still almost walked through in the second round, in the second leg of the tie. So I think still they have more reserves. I think that the physical threat, especially from dead ball situations, is going to really trouble Arsenal. You saw against Chelsea that they really struggled, where Wenger, to an extent, I guess, tweaked his formation or his lineup to deal with that, but then lost a lot in terms of playing ability. And it's going to be exactly the same dilemma for him again. And even if they get a goal or two away from home, I think still United over two legs are the better team.
Chelsea, then. The other semi-final. Chelsea warm up by beating West Ham and a radio talk show host. Cech still looks a worry for Chelsea. Bazingwa's got to play at left back. Is that right?
Cech also made a very good penalty save.
He did.
Saturday.
But he also did a bit of that wandering around stuff that you were describing around, not looking, not knowing.
Yeah, but then Barcelona don't actually going to not necessarily pepper the box with hundreds of hopeful punts up front. So
right.
I don't think that's going to be too much of a problem. It's a very different game.
All right. Well, the thing everyone's talking about is who's going to be taking Ashley Cole's place and thus facing up to Leo Messi. The idea is that it's going to be Bosingwa. Mm. Gus Hiddink has played this game through in his mind twice.
Yeah.
And what do you think, Raphael?
Well, I think switching a right-back to left-back shouldn't be a total disaster for any sort of technically accomplished player. The difference is one of, I think, mental attitude rather than technique. Of course, you have to tackle slightly differently, but I would expect the Portuguese international to cope quite well with that. The question is more, will Chelsea start playing from the get-go, or will they again take 30 minutes to really get going and then switch, almost come to life later on at game, the way they did against Arsenal, the way they did against Liverpool in the Champions League? And I don't think they can afford to do that because, of course, Bayern played similarly badly and they were 3-0 down, I think, after 30 minutes. So they'll have to really start playing with a lot more focus and drive from the first moment, because physically, and I think from the power that they still have, they can hurt Barcelona. If it's going to become a football match, with lots of pretty passing, I think they'll be passed off the pitch.
You mentioned the power, and Michael Essien is obviously central to that. So I certainly hope they don't play him at right full back as they did in the Champions League final last year. And Basinga's positional sense isn't amazing, but it's better than Essien's in defence.
Yeah, well, I think Ivanovic has done enough to keep that spot anyway on the right. So I don't think that's going to be a major problem for them. The problem is you have to stop them in midfield. And interesting enough, against Arsenal, they had a similar problem in the first half at Wembley. And what Hiddink did is he was almost counterintuitive. He put Michael Ballack back, who was playing effectively a holding midfielder for large parts of the game, and pushed Essien further forward to really have a go at Arsenal much further ahead. And it really worked. And I think we might see a similar setup for them.
Very interesting. Well, very shortly, we'll be hearing from Sid Lowe on what has been a difficult few days for Barcelona as they prepare for Chelsea's visit. That's coming up right after this.
Football Weekly from Guardian.co.uk.
Part two gets underway with the comforting sounds of Dr. Sid there in Spain. Sid, Barcelona, just what they didn't need as they head into this massive European clash. Their lead has been cut in the Liga. A trip to Real Madrid is approaching.
Yeah, 4 points. It's really incredible what's happened over the last 19 weeks. Basically, as everybody knows, I think that the Spanish season is done in two mirror images. So you play every team once in the first half of the season, then you play the same run of games, but the other way around in the second half of the season. So Juan de Ramos has now been in charge for half a season in Spain, 19 games, 18 victories and one draw. Of course, his first game in charge was Barcelona. They lost that. Since then, 18 victories, one draw, and it's Barcelona up next. It's now 4 points, the lead at the top of the table, with Barcelona to come at the weekend. And I think for the first time, we're really seeing that, hang on a minute, it genuinely is game on. Because everybody talked a lot about the pressure on Barcelona. Oh, look, Madrid are behind us. We can't shake them off. But in a way, there was pressure on Madrid as well, because however hard they worked, and bear in mind, you know, 18 victories in 19 games is an extraordinary record, they still couldn't quite close the gap on Barcelona. And I think now, for the first time, they genuinely feel that Barcelona are within reach.
All right, well, we'll talk more about the game coming up at the Bernabeu on Thursday, if we may. But just to say well done to Real Madrid, who beat Sevilla. Raul got a hat-trick, didn't he?
Yeah, they were very impressive, Real Madrid, as well. And it's not a phrase I say very often, but it also isn't entirely true. By that, I mean that for the first 25 minutes or so, Sevilla absolutely battered Real Madrid. And I think one of the amazing things about Madrid this year is their ability to, this 19-game run, basically they've been in a position where any defeat and it was game over. They've been teetering on the edge all the way through it, but they keep getting away with it. They've got tremendous courage and spirit in the team, and they were really battered by Sevilla yesterday. 1-0 down, should have been 2, maybe even 3. Then they got a goal just before halftime, pretty much out of nothing. Then Raul got 2 more in the second half, a hat-trick for him. They won 4-2 in the end. And they were genuinely impressive in the second half for Real Madrid.
All right. Meanwhile, Barcelona did they get beaten by Valencia?
No, they drew 2-2 with Valencia. They felt that it was a good point as well, because it was a late equaliser for Thierry Henry.
All right. You mentioned in a piece that you wrote at the end of last week, Sid, Barcelona have 33 more league goals than Manchester United, 30 more than Wolfsburg, 34 more than Inter in Italy, 38 more than Marseille in France, and 42 more than Porto in, Portugal. Eto'o, Messi and Henry have 90 goals between them, which is more than any other team in Europe's other major leagues. It's incredible. They've also got Carlos Puyol. So, given what happened against Valencia, what's the lesson for Chelsea?
Well, the lesson for Chelsea, I think, is one that they would have probably already known. I mean, we're not saying anything new, and it's also one that we talked about a little bit before with Barcelona. They have the best defensive record in the Spanish league, and so on the face of it, to say that they're defensively weak would be foolish. But they have the best defensive record in the Spanish league because they keep the ball so brilliantly. They don't concede the opportunity for the other team to create chances. The problem is that if you do get beyond their midfield, Barcelona's defence, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's vulnerable, because it's not a bad defence, but it's not the best. And certainly I think in Victor Valdes they have a goalkeeper who flaps when he comes off his line. He's a very good shot stopper, but he's very, very poor coming for crosses. Barcelona has struggled on set plays of late, particularly corners. And I think Chelsea will be in a position where they'll be relatively happy to let Barcelona play the ball, keep the ball most of the time, so long as they can get a release ball over the top quickly. And that will cause Barcelona problems. Barcelona will not compromise their style, and that almost could be their problem.
Just before you joined us, Sid, Rafael was making a very interesting point that that Chelsea went into their recent cup clash with Arsenal by playing two defensive midfielders, but one, Essien, who would normally be a bit more withdrawn, further up to, in other words, destroy Arsenal a bit further up the field. Is that something that Barcelona are... I mean, they have this incredible midfield behind their incredible front three, which we mentioned, but how easy is it to get in there and disrupt them?
Well, the few teams that have caused some problems this year have done it by playing high tempo and by putting pressure on them. Espanyol caused them real problems in the Copa del Rey and then beat them in the league by being very aggressive, by stepping the team up and trying to put pressure on them. Xavi Hernandez this weekend against Valencia, and of course, he's the guy that moves the ball brilliantly for Barcelona and very rarely puts a foot wrong. He was actually, to some extent, bullied out of the game. And I think by Chelsea having three central midfielders, and if they're not going to then effectively detail them and say, right, you go on one each of these players. And I do think that, yeah, Barcelona will have problems getting out from there. And they will probably need then Dani Alves to bomb on from the back, as he tends to do anyway, to try and give them an extra number in the middle of the pitch. And I think Chelsea are very, very well equipped to cause them problems. Not least because, as I say, I don't think Chelsea necessarily feel the need to have much possession of the ball, because they know that when they get it, they can be quick and direct and cause Barcelona lots of trouble.
Sid, I see that Espanyol have put two wins together since you predicted that they might get out of trouble during, or I think it was last week. So do you reckon they'll escape the drop?
Yeah, I do. And not just because they're getting results now. They've now played five games. I think it's five games, one draw and four wins. Since their coach went on a pilgrimage. And it's not just that they're playing well, but it's that teams around them, I think, are in big trouble and not playing well. Sporting have now slipped into the relegation zone, and Getafe are only a point ahead of them. So Espanyol actually two places outside the relegation zone. So, I think they're in a very good position now, Espanyol, to survive. The last week has actually been a bit bizarre. I was saying last week, wasn't I, that with midweek games, things would become clearer because there'd be three games in 8 days and everything would become clearer in the league. Actually, the reverse has happened. It's tightened up at the bottom and it's tightened up in the battle for the Champions League place as well. I think we're going to have four or five really interesting weeks between now and the end of the season.
Where did you go on a pilgrimage to, Sid?
He went to Montserrat, which is just outside Barcelona. He hiked 12 kilometres to see the Black Virgin of Montserrat, Catalunya's one of Catalunya's patron saints, and pleaded with her to save Espanyol. And she was listening, which was rather nice of her.
Well, so far.
So far. Yeah, all right, of course. So, she could turn her back on him and go for far more worthy causes at some stage, I'm sure.
Right, indeed so. Depends who else is willing to make the hike to Montserrat. Very good.
Well, no, it's not as if religion has always turned its hand to the most worthy of causes anyway, is it?
We could go on a pilgrimage to see her and ask if she could get us a Webby Award.
Yeah. All right, then. It's significantly further for us to travel, Barry, but a Webby Award is so prestigious.
Oh, I'd love one.
Yeah. All right, then. Sid, well, we'll be back on Thursday. We'll bring you news of how the Webby Award voting is going. Excellent. I hope you enjoy the midweek action, Sid, and we look forward to your response vis-a-vis said matches on Thursday.
Brilliant. Speak to you then. Ta-da.
Ta-da, indeed. You know what? It's almost two decades since the lovable rogues that inhabit this port city have had a league title to call their own. But Marseille could well be finally crowning, ending that long drought this season.
Yeah, that's right. 1993 was the last time they won the title, although they were stripped of that for bribing the opponents in the last league match. So 92
was against the rules, apparently.
It is, it turns out, yeah. Sure. Yeah, and they haven't won a trophy of any kind since becoming champions of Europe in 93, because disgracefully they weren't stripped of that title. They've been in finals, so they've contrived to lose them, so you wouldn't put it past them to bottle this lead. But they were very good last night in winning at Lille, which is a very tough place to go. Lille are a good team. They've already beaten Lyon, Bordeaux at home this season, but Marseille went a goal behind, as they had done the previous week at Lorient, and stormed back immediately. And won the match convincingly, created a lot of chances, which is something that Lyon are struggling to do this season. That going forward, they're heavily reliant on Karim Benzema.
Right.
For goals, they're having trouble creating chances other than that. So Lyon, the title race now looks between Marseille and Bordeaux, who weren't in action this weekend because they were winning the League Cup. So they were in action, but they weren't in league action.
Right.
If you get my drift.
I think we will do, yeah, across that. Although Barry's actually taking out his frustrations on a paper cup. What's the problem, Barry, there?
I think we're coming to Sunderland's performance.
Two girls, one cup.
There goes the Webby Award.
So Marseille currently 5 points clear of second place Bordeaux, but Bordeaux clearly with the game in hand. Yeah. And then Lyon still only 1 point ahead of PSG in the race for the final Champions League.
Lyon reckon they'll lose out on £40 million if they fail to qualify for the Champions League for the first time in 10 years or something.
When was the last time they won a game, Lyon? It's quite a while now, isn't it? They've only got 3 points in the last four. I know, they're collapsing.
I can't remember. But what I can tell you is that in 2 weeks they have to go to Marseille, which will be an immense match.
Ooh, crikey.
Paul, have Marseille overcome this sort of mental block, you think, this year? That's always seemed to.
Yeah, I mean, the last night's victory at Lille was a very good illustration of that, because the referee seemed to be against them. He gave a penalty to Lille in the first half for them. Well, actually, it was correctly given, but there was some discussion as to how the ref was able to see it, or the assistant linesman was able to see it. It was only after a lot of Lille players crowded around and demanded it that he gave in. But the keeper saved it. And as I say, they fell behind, and within 8 minutes, I think, they were 2-1 in front. And, and they controlled the game from then on.
What a difference Tyrone Mears makes.
Well, no. I think he's played four times this season.
Oh, really?
He hasn't been particularly influential.
He'd get a
PFA
award for that over here.
Oh, dear. Well, thanks for that little snippet on Marseille, what you might call a Marseille more so, if you were so inclined. But then again, you might not. Raphael, help me out by telling me all about the crazy world of the Bundesliga, where we hear today Jürgen Klinsmann has taken the fall, unusually enough, given his career history and that, etc. What's going on in the Bundesliga?
Well, the big story, the big splash, as you might say, with Klinsmann's background, is that he has been gone, relieved of his duties. Today, Monday lunchtime, it was sort of coming for a while. People in Munich were saying, well, he's definitely going in the summer regardless. Even if he won the title, he would have been gone. Uli Hoeneß, the very powerful general manager, was trying to see this through until the summer, then make have some sort of agreeable, mutually agreeable dissolution of the contract. But it wasn't to be, because they lost again at home to Schalke. And not only did that not do anything for the chances for the title, but also put into serious doubt the qualification for the Champions League, which is the real reason why they now pulled the plug on him.
Right, okay, top three goes through. You've got Wolfsburg top, 2 points clear of Berlin, 1 point behind Berlin, Hertha Berlin. Meanwhile, you have three teams, Bayern, Stuttgart and Hamburg, all tied on 54. So not only the battle for the Champions League, but also the battle for the title. Wide open, five teams within 3 points.
Yeah, and while, you know, Wolfsburg lost yesterday, quite surprisingly, away to Cottbus. So I think by the time Bayern made the decision, which was a bit before, it looked as if Bayern were going to be 6 points adrift, or at least five, and at least four, sorry. And that, of course, influenced the decision as well. But the real, the real problem is Champions League, because third spot doesn't guarantee you qualification. You'll have to play from next season. You could play a very big team.
Right.
Under the new UEFA rules, you could come up against Liverpool or Arsenal, for example. So, a €50 million gap in the balance sheet would even hurt Bayern very much.
Right.
And they felt that they can't just watch until the season goes to pot completely.
Okay, so is it Jupp Heynckes coming in the meantime?
Jupp Heynckes,
Who's going to be the long-term man? Roberto Mancini was expressing an interest last week.
Yeah, well, they don't know. There is no obvious candidate. There is no one on the German market that it would obviously look at. Of course, Jogi Löw, who's done a great job, is still very much tied to Germany in the run-up of 2010. So it's a situation where they haven't got any big ideas, I'm afraid to say. And of course, the last big idea they had, which was Klinsmann, backfired terribly. I mean, they said, Uli Hoeneß said, you know, we want it change. The problem is they want it change on their own terms, and they want it change with results. Mm. And Klinsmann couldn't deliver on either of them.
Although he did put little statues of Buddha on top of the training.
Yeah, he didn't actually personally do that. An interior designer did. But the Buddha statues, which caused a lot of controversy in Catholic Bayern, some people wrote in that to Bayern saying, what's happening here? Are we trying to convert players to Buddhism? And they were in earnest protesting against these new wave ideas from California. They will, I think, come to be a bit of a symbol of his failed rain.
But anyway, Bayern now say that was then. This is now. So
yes, for you, Clinzy, the game is over.
Magnificent stuff, Raphael. Ooh, excellent stuff as ever. I see Paolo Mondini has just joined us. If you're wondering what's happened to our chat on the relegation battle and all sorts of things like Southampton, big issues like that coming up very, very shortly. Paolo, though, I see the Italian title race is back on again.
Or is it, James? Or is it? Yes, of course, everyone's very excited because Inter finally lost again.
Barry's not.
Well, no, Barry's definitely not excited, but everyone else...
I'm not.
Okay. Everyone with a passing interest in Serie A is very excited because Inter lost. But in reality, it means very little. It's a seven-point gap with five games to go. They have made up 7 points in three games, but you look at the games they've got left over and Inter's toughest games, you know, maybe at home to Lazio and away to Cagliari.
That's this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, and this weekend, and if Inter drop points against Lazio, I'm sure everyone will get even more, you know, excitable about it. But, you know, Milan still have to play Juventus, Roma, Fiorentina. And, you know, I really can't imagine that they're going to make up that difference.
All right, what about for Napoli, though? Because this was the first win of Roberto Donadoni's time there. Are they now a force again?
Well, I've got to be honest with you, I watched it. It was an absolutely dreadful game. Oh. I mean, Inter were doing this, you know, classic bad Mourinho from the beginning of the season where he's got, you know, bank of three midfielders and a bank of three attackers and absolutely nothing connecting the two. And Napoli really, to be honest, you didn't provide much of a threat for most of the game. You know, neither team did. It was really just not a lot happening. And Zalaschetta comes off the bench. He hasn't scored in, you know, since the beginning of time, it feels like, but he comes off the bench, you know, his shot gets a little ricochet and it goes in. And, you know, it's great for Donadoni. He's got off the mark and everything, but I really don't think he's, you know, he hasn't exactly reinvented the wheel since replacing Reja. He's still trying to play 3-5-2. They're not any more fluid. In fact, you know, they're less fluid than they were at the beginning of the season. So I don't really know that he's necessarily brought anything on there. But, you know, as a former, you know, Milan player, I'm sure he'll be thrilled to have done his team, you know, potentially a favour.
Absolutely. Nice to see Pippo Inzaghi, by the way, in the 3-0 win for Milan over Palermo.
Yeah.
Hitting the net again. Let me see. Fiorentina, this is the other big story. Trashing Roma 4-1.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, stunning performance from Fiorentina. Stunningly bad performance from Roma at the same time. But, you know, basically Fiorentina hit the ground running. Vargas gave them the lead after 6 minutes, I think it was. And after that, no looking back. And you know, you look at it now and Roma, you know, again, you wouldn't completely write them off. They're only 6 points away from the top four now. But really, they're just not playing well enough to believe they're going to make one of those Champions League spots. And Genoa lost, so now it's Fiorentina who are back up again in fourth. But, you know, it's probably between those two, basically, for that last spot.
All right, Roma have been slung into a punitive training camp for the week.
Yeah, Rosella Sensi sent them all off to Trigoria to think about what they've done.
Mm.
And she says they may stay there until the end of the season.
My word. Cagliari is seventh. Get in. Look at that. Online for a place in Europe. They had an incredible 3-3 in Genoa. And well done to Massimo Allegri, who some people say still is going to be a future manager at Milan instead of Carlo Ancelotti. Carlo Ancelotti is saying again this weekend that he's not going anywhere, despite all the rumours that he's going to be taking
over. And Marcello Lippi as well coming out this week and saying he's not taking the Juventus job as well. Which, you know, I mean, you never know how much to trust anything, but that's what they're saying.
Indeed they are. That's, I think, where we come to the end of part two, although we've got some posts, but we'll get onto those in part three. Paolo, many, many thanks for that. I know you've got to get off now to compile an exciting online account of the latest derring do in Serie A, so look forward to reading that. Thanks in the meantime. Part three is standing by. Ooh. 345 posts and counting.
I think most of them are mine.
I was just going to say, only 250 or so from Barry, and that's not really an exaggeration, is it? You got busy, didn't you?
I did.
Barry, yeah, good for you.
Well, I was being misquoted all over the place,
curses.
Which I always find slightly irritating, because it's not as if there aren't enough things people could pull me up on, you know, without having...
What can they pull you up on, then? Just so they know, to avoid confusion, what are they allowed to pull you up on, Barry?
Well, if I, say, engage in the mildest bit of criticism of Rafael Benitez,
yes,
I'm more than happy for 20,000
are you
oversensitive scousers to wade in.
Because then you usually reply, these, why are you oversensitive scousers deafening ears with your high-pitched whining?
Yeah, well... No, they're perfectly entitled to do it because if they think I'm incorrect. But, you know, being misquoted is rather unfair, I think.
All right, then. Not singing anymore. Isn't Barry posting it a bit like that Woody Allen film, I think it was The Purple Rose of Cairo, where the actor stepped off the cinema screen and mingled with the audience? I bet you haven't seen. You're not a Woody Allen fan, I'm guessing, Barry.
I like some of his movies, but not. Oh, I haven't seen that one. No,
it wasn't one of his best, to be fair. Harry Kidnap picking up the baton of pod members as cartoon characters. Has you, Barry, as Krusty the Clown, jaded comedian, Ingler, Scooby-Doo, barely intelligible. Raphael, you're Yogi Bear, mainly because you look a little bit like him. Matt Scott is Fred Flintstone, because he sounds like him, insists Harry Kidnap. Matt Scott got a real beating on the post, which I thought was a little bit unfair. He may come across as not entirely the same affable, charming chap that he is in person, but I thought he supplied plenty of interesting detail to it. Yeah.
A lot of our listeners seem to be very, very sensitive. I mean, if you... Occasionally, I will respond to somebody's post, right, and then
in a polite and delicate manner.
But I'm then accused of being thin-skinned.
Yes,
which I don't really understand. But
right.
Matt's. I think a lot of people misinterpreted the mood or something.
Right. Okay. Barney gets the Pac-Man vote because he's always munching his way through fruit. That's very clever, Harry Kidnap. Well done. And to the person who's posting in saying, "Was it me?"
Pac-Man wasn't a cartoon, was it?
It's true.
Oh, yeah, he's confused character. That with the video games one. Wow, silly me. I got so carried away by the munching his way through fruit thing.
Someone said they thought they saw you at the Yeah Yeah Yeahs.
Yes.
With a beautiful woman.
Yes.
Who I presume and hope sincerely was enough, your wife.
Luckily enough, it was Mrs. Jimbo.
I think a little bit of discretion is called for from our listeners, because someone could have got you in very serious trouble there if you were up to no good.
Indeed so. In other news... Southampton will go out of business in 8 days' time unless they find a buyer. Crikey. They've been hit by this 10-point penalty, which is really, this is a little bit vicious. Even if they managed to get themselves out of the bottom three, then the 10-point penalty would have made them relegated. But now that they're relegated anyway, then they have to use it next season. That's rotten luck, that is.
I don't think it's unprecedented.
All right. And what about Southampton, who, major, major side in English football. As recently as 2003, they were finishing eighth, FA Cup final. Well, are they about to disappear altogether?
You often hear about these clubs that they're going to go out of business, but I think there's a couple of people interested in buying it,
right,
buying Southampton, so they're probably going to hold on as long as possible to get it for the cheapest price. But by all accounts, the players' wages were paid last week with money that was collected by supporters in buckets and whatnot. So, they're in dire, dire financial trouble.
Right.
But, you know, Jimbo, if they do go out of business, their Southampton fans are very lucky that there's another club nearby, Portsmouth, that they can all go and support instead.
That's good, because it's not a long journey.
Yeah.
All right. I have to say, I know you're joking about my controversial remarks the other day, but I have to say, the idea of me stumping up money for football players...
Well, I don't know if the fans necessarily knew that they were stumping up money to pay the players' wages. But, yeah, I hope the players appreciate the gesture.
Yeah, I'm sure the players knew that had they forgone a week's wages or something, it would have helped the cause.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, elsewhere, Burton made it up to League Two in the end, so hooray for Burton.
Despite their best attempts not to, because they actually lost their game against Torquay. But Cambridge United weren't able to capitalise by getting, I think they needed to win 4-0.
Five-goal swing they needed,
So they couldn't do that.
Mm. Well, there you go, Burton up into the Football League. Birmingham, very, very nearly secure promotion, but managed to bottle it. What happened there?
Well, they were goal up, 20 minutes to go and heading for the Premier League, and Preston North End came back and beat them. So now Birmingham can still go up if it's in their own hands if they beat Reading away next week. But depending on how Reading get on against Norwich tonight, tonight being Monday night, Reading and Sheffield United can also still go up.
Right, okay. Well, we'll have a full preview on the final round of Championship games in Thursday's pod, shall we? Now, also happening tonight, of course, is that big Newcastle-Portsmouth game in the Premier League, the first of the must-win home fixtures for Alan Shearer's Magpies. We obviously don't know what's happened in that yet, sadly, but we can tell you about one or two other results. West Brom, for example, winning at the weekend, moving to 6 points of safety. And
sorry, Paul was at that game. I'm just curious to know how bad were Sunderland?
Sunderland were absolutely diabolical, and they were the worst team I've seen this season, actually. Before the weekend, Bolton at Craven Cottage was the worst performance I'd seen in the top flight this season. Sunderland was far below that. They were absolutely despicable. The idea of, if Sunderland were ever in trouble, I don't think any fans would stump up their wages. I mean, because they didn't appear terribly keen to earn them. Jibril Cisse and Kenwyn Jones. In fact, I was quite sorry for Andy Reid throughout, because certainly in the first half, he was closest to the Sunderland dugout. So Ricky Sprazier seemed to be berating him mostly. He was the only midfielder who was trying to be positive and play passes. His big problem was that Jones and Cisse had no interest in running for his passes, so they always looked like bad balls.
You just wonder, I mean, presumably their contracts are not valid for the for the championship. You just wonder at what stage a professional player will think, I'm actually better off going down here and then walking away than sticking with them for another dreadful year, and might as well stop trying now.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, I mean, Sprazier got the job on a permanent basis on the back of being the player's choice. Now they seem to be trying to want him out by the looks of it.
I'm always deeply suspicious of managerial appointments where the manager appointed is the player's choice, you know, because it suggests that, well, I will have a cushy if he's in the hot seat. I think the bloke the players want should always be the last person that should be appointed.
Indeed, so.
Maybe the penultimate one after the one they really don't want.
I feel a bit sorry for West Brom, to be honest, because you can see from their fans and the reaction of Tony Mowbray that they've a glimmer of hope. They see a light at the end of the tunnel that they could pull off a great escape, but there is no way they're going to play a team as abject and just downright rubbish as Sunderland season or indeed next season.
All right, Sunderland still 4 points clear of the drop. Hull, after their defeat by Liverpool, only 3 points clear of the bottom three, which is Middlesbrough, Newcastle, West Brom, of course. But that's the thing, you can't see too many points being picked up by the bottom three to really put the pressure on Sunderland and Hull.
Middlesbrough away to United next. Not going to get... Well, Paul reckons they might... he reckons he wouldn't be surprised if they did. I think the rest of us would be.
Paul has a thing for Middlesbrough, though.
I just think that Middlesbrough are a weird team. So of all the teams down at the bottom to beat Man United, you'd probably pick them because they do these wacky things from time to time. On the evidence of the season so far, there's no reason to expect them to do it because they are rubbish.
Right.
But they did beat Liverpool. That was their last win in the league. So,
Indeed it was. Blackburn, meanwhile, moving to 6 points off the drop. Big victory for them at the weekend. Everton, meanwhile, got beaten at home by Man City. It was first away win for the Citizens in, 15 attempts or so. And Rubinho looked great. Steven Ireland. Jagielka did his cruciate ligaments, and that's him for the FA Cup. And
it's very unfortunate for him because he's had a brilliant season. He's a good player and seems like a
really
decent
he's not in
club.
The PFA list. Barry,
but the PFA is how Stephen Ireland didn't get the Young Player of the Year award is bizarre. I mean,
would it be possible that it's because it's voted by the players and the players all think he's a bit weird and therefore didn't vote for him because they don't like him?
I was wondering if that's why Lampard and Rooney didn't figure in the team of the season. Rooney's kicked half the electorate, so that probably reeled him out. And Lampard, maybe he's not popular among his peers. I don't know.
I can't imagine why.
He should have.
Although I don't think we should say anything bad about him, or he might ring up and threaten us with bodily harm.
Right, he didn't threaten bad the DJ with bodily harm. I think actually that he handled himself pretty well.
Well, the DJ. I think he shouldn't have rang that guy at all because he shouldn't have dignified him with a response because your man is getting great publicity out of some
Barry,
DJ.
Speaking as somebody who dignifies people with a response all the time, about 200 times on the post, surely you can understand why he felt that he was being misquoted or his situation vis-a-vis his family breakup was being misconstrued. He would want to put the record straight. I'm glad he did, and I think that he might have made all of us think just a little bit more next time we butt our nose in somebody else's private life.
We never put our noses into people's private life on this pod. I don't think we do, or not that I can remember. And if someone put their nose into my private life on the Football Weekly thread, I certainly wouldn't dignify them.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, it is an interesting point that you make about the fact that these awards are voted on by the players. Speak Truth saying, why are we all so upset about
gigs? Just to go back to that. It was probably more to do with the timing as well, because Ashley Young did have a good early half to the season.
Well, this was back in March.
But then he's completely dropped off.
Right. It's not a decision. It's a flaming vote by his fellow pros, says Speak Truth. It's called democracy. And there is this idea that it is a sentimental in the absence of a really standout candidate, fine, we'll give a sentimental award to Ryan Giggs.
I think it's very churlish to begrudge Giggs the award.
Right.
It probably is a sentimental vote, but anyone who begrudges him, I think, would need to relax a bit. Anyway, it's only an award. We don't care about awards in this pod.
We certainly don't. Where's Rooney, is my note, about the PFA Team of the Year. Who votes for the Team of the Year, then? Who is that?
The players.
Right, it's the players again. There's no Rooney in there. And Anelka is. There you go. All very, very strange. Well, there you go. That's, I believe, it for today's Football Weekly. And hope it finds you in fine health, etc. We will be back post the first leg of the semi-finals with the reaction to them. And I look forward to what seems to be a big weekend all around Europe. So hopefully you'll be joining us for that. In the meantime, many thanks to Paul Doyle, to Barry Glendinning, and to Raphael Honigstein, whose excellent report on the Clinsy fallout situation will be no doubt up a little bit later today, will it? Raphael?
Hopefully.
Looking forward to that. Many thanks to Ben and Pete, and we'll be speaking to you on Thursday. Bye-bye.